Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey guys, one quick note before the Point Forward podcast gets started. I referred incorrectly to a game in this podcast, the Bucks game against the Orlando Magic on Monday. What I meant in the moment was the Bucks game against Orlando on Saturday. That's significant because the Monday game actually hasn't happened by the time we're recording this. So I think we've mentioned before to try to get this out on Tuesdays. Sometimes schedules make it difficult to get to the games that take place on Monday night. So the two gents you're about to hear talk, myself and Jim Ozarski, we have no idea what happens in the Monday night game between Orlando and the Bucks. So if something significant does happen, we will be sure to bring it up on the next edition of the Point Forward podcast. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line, as always, is Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's been a trio of home games this week for the Bucks, and hey, they won them all. They started with a win over the Lakers, kind of a high-profile win last Wednesday, and then they followed it up against Oklahoma City and Orlando. Not the best of opponents, and not the best to see a 30-point lead and similar or close to a 30-point lead in both games almost go down down by the wayside. But the Bucks prevail. They are back in the above 500 column. And Jim, it's also marked the return of Chris Middleton. He was back on Wednesday for that game against the Lakers, out of the health and safety protocol, like we anticipated, and playing 30 minutes a game. He's, you know, I would say as far as workload goes, close to full capacity. What are your thoughts on how he's played so far? And you know, do you feel like he's, you know, maybe close to all the way back? And how much longer do you think it'll take to get him back to the Chris Middleton we know and love?
Yeah, I mean, clearly coming out of his bout with COVID-19, unlike Jrue Holiday last year, where it was, I think, off the bench in maybe 20 minutes, 22 minutes. I mean, to start at 30 obviously shows Chris Middleton, you know, thankfully came through, I guess, on that sort of with his wind, right? He was able to kind of do some work, you know, as the Bucks ended that road trip. So that's good. Clearly, though, his shot not quite there. But if anyone had sort of forgotten, you know, how clutch he can be when this team needs it, look no further than that debut against, or the re-debut, if you will, against the Lakers, right? 0-for-4. Short, and then what happens? Hits two buckets from the mid-range at the end of the third quarter, hits his first two threes at the start of the fourth, you know, 10 straight points when that offense went away to really get the Bucks kind of back in that game against the Lakers. 8 assists against Orlando, so he scores 13 points. Those 8 assists turn into 21 for his teammates. A lot of those wide-open threes, including Giannis on a catch-and-shoot, believe it or not. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't think the scoring is there. Maybe his legs aren't there. Look, he even said, Jay, I remember way back at the very beginning of the year, he said his legs and his conditioning quite weren't where he normally is with the short off season. So I'm still thinking Thanksgiving is when we'll see like peak Chris Middleton or like back to normal. But clearly, his return, I don't think it's a coincidence that he's back and they've won 3 straight for the first time.
Speaking of guys coming back, I know we've talked a lot about Brook Lopez, but there was some optimistic reporting done that he was starting to get back into the groove. What have you heard on him? Do you feel like you're closer to at least having answers, if not actually Brook Lopez back on the court?
Yeah, he, we're still trying to get him to speak locally, but Mike Budenholzer did say that, he's, I guess, doing more things. I think the joke was, he was sweaty and in workout clothes at practice. Like, I mean, we've gotten to that level of ridiculousness with this team and just sort of not saying anything. But
this reminds me of those student reporters that reported, I think it was an Oklahoma backup quarterback because they had binoculars and were on top of an adjacent building. I feel like we're in that stage here.
So I don't know. I mean, I think if the Bucks let him talk, because generally speaking, they don't like to have injured players speak. So I would think if he talks, they feel good that he's sort of getting close. I don't think he's going to say, hey, I'm coming back in Indiana, right? Like, he's going to have to practice, right? Like that's just how this goes. But who knows? Maybe he'll practice, you know, the day after we record this or a couple days down the line, Thanksgiving, whatever it may be. I would say it's sort of good news, even if I think the Bucks, when this is over, JR, are going to admit that maybe it went a little longer than they initially hoped.
All right, so the Bucks in general, with Chris Middleton, took some huge leads against the Oklahoma City Thunder and against the Orlando Magic. Now, they won both games, so all's well that ends well, but in both cases, massive leads were trimmed down to single digits. It got very dicey, especially in the Oklahoma City game, where really the Thunder went ice cold too. And if they had made a basket, I think they probably just a couple more baskets could have pulled away from the Bucks. But that never happened. So the Bucks have to get credit for gutting it out. But what is up with that, Jim? Is that a function of this team still not being at full strength? Is it a focus thing? Is it just a random blip on the map? It's just two games we're talking about. This is a case for a lot of NBA teams. It's going to pop up over the course of a season. It's happened to the Bucks, including last year in their championship season. It happened a couple times. So this is not completely abnormal. But for a team that needs every win they can get at this point, remember, they've been toiling under 500 at this point. They can't afford to do that. They can't afford to let those blowouts become tense games and have those starters in at the end. So what is your interpretation of that whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll go to what Bobby Portis said after they nearly lost that 28-point fourth quarter lead, which would have been, I mean, mind-blowing, to be honest. You know, where he said, look, there's no garbage minutes, you know, when he said those guys are playing hard. And look, those were the last five guys on the Magic bench, right? And they get within 4 points.
That's the other thing. And it was Oklahoma City, too. They had Lu Dort and four subs. These are backups doing this to the Milwaukee Bucks.
And I think some of that is you've got a couple of teams where those guys played hard all the way to the end, you know, and that sounds sort of obvious, but I don't think that happens all the time. And look, the Bucks have been prone to very poor shooting. You know, that's been a case all year long. I mean, other than Grayson Allen sort of figuring out the three-point shot after the first few games of the season, I mean, you know, Giannis does his Giannis things around the rim, but I mean, tell me a Bucks player right now that you'd say is really lighting it up. I mean, Pat Connaughton, career best at threes, I think, right now. But, you know, Bobby Portis, the 6 of 6 against Orlando, that finally got him back to his sort of average three-point shooting mark. So I think it's a function of a couple of those things. And you're right, Jared. I'm glad you mentioned last year. I mean, I remember a couple of podcasts. We were like, you know, how come they're losing these 17-point leads, these 20-point second-half leads? And they talked about it of just like having to learn how to close out a team. And while the core is back, I am one of those believers that every team is different every year, even if it's the same guys. So I think it's just something to monitor and see how they kind of work through it and frankly, this version of the Bucks learns how to close those out.
I wonder, too, if in the NBA, like you're saying, it's silly to say guys aren't playing hard or whatever, but it's an 82-game season. There are going to be games where team goes down big, and what's the point? They have another game in 2 nights, or maybe in some cases the next night. They have to reel it in a little bit because an injury is far more catastrophic than one loss. But against the Milwaukee Bucks, that's the defending NBA champion. Nobody's going to sit down and just take an L from the Bucks, especially when they're vulnerable as they've been. You know, this is a chance to have put up a potential, I don't know if season changing is probably too strong, but it's a pretty impressive resume win. And that can do something for a team that's scuffling a little bit. So I wonder if that's it too. You're just not going to get any off nights from the other team because the Bucks are now the gold standard, I guess.
Yeah, there's definitely that. And, you know, I think to the counterpoint of the Orlando game specifically, when Giannis and Drew were put back in at the 5-minute mark and I think Middleton came in shortly thereafter. Look, you know, I've seen coaches in the NBA just sort of say, all right, bench guys, like you got us into this, you get us out. But the Bucks are kind of at that unique point where they can't really just take an L. I mean, 9-8 is better than 8-9, And, you know, they hadn't been over 500 since October. So, I mean, I think Mike Budenholzer was like, we got to win this game, you know, and it still almost didn't work. So, yeah, I think there is that combination of these other teams are gonna go hard all the time, and especially these younger teams with things to prove with new coaches.
So speaking of Giannis, he's still putting up great numbers. He's great as always. No questions asked. No notes. He's having an adventurous week in magazine land. He first of all was mentioned prominently in a GQ article. Given some credit, he's the I believe it was the male athlete of the year, I think was the designation on the cover of GQ. No surprise, he's had a huge year. He's a fashionable guy. He fits the profile there. But interesting nugget in that story that a lot of people latched onto is the implication that he may not be in Milwaukee for forever, which maybe on the surface is not a crazy thing to say, but we know he's here for, in theory, the next 5 years as the Supermax extension works its way through. And the implication here is that, well, you know, he achieved he got to the top of the mountain in Milwaukee, and maybe after the next couple years, he would think about going somewhere else to find that new challenge. That's consistent with how he speaks and how he's sort of presented as thinking. He's always looking for a new challenge, looking for something to sort of broaden his horizons, never satisfied. And I mean, hey, you brought a title to Milwaukee, is the big thing you said you were going to do. It's got to be a little hard to generate those, you know, the next step. The easy, of course, we can all say, well, you got to win it again, build a dynasty, not just a championship team. But that's maybe a little, that part is maybe a little easier said than done. Did you find that, was that eyebrow raising to you, or was that pretty consistent with what you'd expect Giannis to say in a situation like that? How did you take those comments?
Yeah, it's consistent. You know, I think since he got to this point of being an MVP, he has applied pressure to the Bucks ownership group, you know, to keep him to stay. He hasn't gone as far as, you know, other superstars, but enough. I mean, JR, you know, I mean, before he signed the Supermax, all the rumors, right? Teams lining up to get him. And he had said, well, as long as they're committed to winning, I mean, kind of your vague stuff. You know, I think Bucks fans got a little fired up because they felt he was sort of taken out of some kind of context, which that's not true. Like, I think he said 2 years, JR, for a reason. And we outlined this in sort of our recap of it, was, you know, there's a player option at the end of the Supermax, so it's really only a 4-year deal. 2 years from now, if the owners decide not to go into the luxury tax any further, if they don't make certain moves and Giannis is unhappy, guess what? They got to trade him after 2 years. I mean, that's what it is. If he decides his challenge is elsewhere, it's after 2 seasons, so the Bucks can trade him and actually get something for him. Like, that's why I thought him saying 2 years specifically was important. And Giannis, even with English as his second language, JR, I think most people can say that he doesn't just generalize or pick things out of the air willy-nilly. Like, I mean, just like Aaron Rodgers, like, the things he says are thought out and thoughtful, and he says for a reason. So I thought that was the most interesting thing, was that he put the 2 years on it, because, yeah, like, the Bucks have to continue to do the things in his view that give him these challenges over a 2-year period. What that is, only he knows, right? And that's clearly what he was saying as well. But that's, I think, was the most interesting part of the GQ thing, was the 2-year element.
Yeah, and, you know, there's not a lot of experience with this, with Milwaukee teams winning championships. And, you know, obviously Kareem left shortly after the Bucks won a championship, and that still leaves a massive scar for older sports fans in this town, in Milwaukee. Yeah, I think back to the Packers winning the Super Bowl. If Aaron Rodgers had said it, and there were actually some comments Aaron Rodgers made in the aftermath. I don't remember the publication, but it was sort of maybe a year later came back and sort of traced what was going through Aaron Rodgers' mind after they won the Super Bowl, and him thinking along the lines of, is this it? Is that all there is? Like, they accomplished everything, and now it's like, well, now what? didn't necessarily lead to will Aaron Rodgers pursue playing for another team within the next few years. He was very early in his starting career at that point. I think you could probably say the same thing about Brett Favre back in the 1996 Super Bowl. Otherwise, football careers are so short, you don't really have many other guys on that team that you would figure would be there a long time. But those guys stayed, and what I'm trying to get to is, I wonder how fans would deal with that. I mean, they got a championship out of it. If nothing else happens in Giannis's Bucks tenure, they did get a championship. They got to see something that fans in this town haven't seen for 50 years. If he decides he goes elsewhere, I know that's going to hurt people, but how much can it hurt? Like, the Bucks fans got what they want. They couldn't, I don't think any Milwaukee Bucks fan grew up thinking, my goal is to see the Bucks win 3 championships in a row. Like, it's a pipe dream, right? I mean, it's possible, but it's a pipe dream. So I don't know how much people can blame Giannis for wanting to look somewhere else. You know, maybe actually try out one of those big markets that he's said in the past he's not really looking for that. But I mean, why wouldn't a player at least want to sample it? So I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is, I'm really curious to know how people will react to that decision, or how they will think about Giannis if he does decide to go elsewhere. Maybe it's way too early to be thinking about this stuff. I'm sure. I mean, it is. But I tried to imagine that. And I'm like, I couldn't blame him if he wanted to go somewhere else. They won here. They did it. He's immortal. Like, what else is there?
Yeah, I think there is that part of it for sure. You know, you won a title or whatever. I mean, it would draw a comparison to Kareem, like, especially if they get to a finals and lose. And, you know, they're sort of that same kind of deal. What I'm interested in, JR, isn't, I mean, I guess, is it so much the fan reaction? I'm curious, you know, so his agent, you know, that reporter did a really good job by sort of adding to that, being like, wait a minute. Like, is Giannis thinking about leaving Milwaukee? And the agent says, no, not necessarily. He's 26. He's accomplished everything.
It's true.
What's the next chance? See, what's funny and what's interesting to me about that is, so Giannis, unlike Aaron Rodgers, who has made it very clear that his legacy matters, that he wants to be considered the greatest of all time, he knows he needs to win more MVPs and Super Bowls, and he's put that out there, right? Giannis has vacillated. He has said, I want to play till I'm essentially till I'm 40, or I want to play a long, long time. Then he made the joke at the NBA Finals, at the end of my career, I want to win 6 man. I want to come off the bench and win 6 man. Like, I wish I would have won Rookie of the Year. So, like, clearly, but then he'll say, don't call me MVP. I'm not MVP. So, like,
yeah,
I think he thinks about winning these things, but also doesn't want to focus on it. He also says, when I'm done, I want to go away. If no one remembers me, that's fine. Well, that can't necessarily be true. Because then if you've accomplished everything at 26, or let's fast forward 3 years, 30, are you just retired then? What's the manufactured challenge? Is it just some pretend? Like, that's the thing. Like, if you watch Last Dance, like, Michael Jordan was in, and Kobe, I think, are like insane. Like, they're sociopaths. Like, you, like, to win, right, and to be that single-minded is if they weren't in sports, they probably wouldn't be very nice people, right? Like,
right.
So, like, I don't know. Is Giannis that singularly driven to collect championships, or is he singularly driven? And then, like, someone made a joke I heard, I think, like, well, if this is what he's into, like, of course he's going to Sacramento after this, right? Like, I mean, like, is it the hard thing? You know, is it, like, he's going to go to New Orleans because that's what he's wired for? I don't know. Like, that's, to me, like, I know that, like, you mentioned the fan part. I almost, like, don't care what the fans think. Like, it's almost, I'm like, I'm fascinated to find out, like, where his head is, because he's alternately says things that are opposed to one another in terms of his legacy, the things he wants to win or accomplish or don't win, or what he doesn't say. Like, I don't know. He's really interesting in that way, and I think he gradually lets us in. I wonder if he'll ever truly, like, reveal it all. You know what I mean? Because it's always been like little bits and pieces throughout these last few years.
Yeah, I agree with you. And not only I mean, this championship is going to be the biggest thing he's ever done. Like, he might,
yeah.
Unless he goes on and wins six of them and then eclipses Jordan. Like, and like you said, if that's not really what his necessarily his aim is, like, the second one will be cool. The third one will be cool. Like, those will be dynasty building maneuvers, but they'll be thought of in total. They won't be thought of as this singular title. This title is the thing that broke the seal for the Milwaukee Bucks organization and for Giannis's career. Nothing is going to top it in a way that's depressing, because he's going to be 27 in December and has done everything that he's going to be known for. His career epithet? I've got the wrong word there. Is going to have pretty much this stuff. And then, yeah, and then they won a couple others. Again, unless he goes on and wins like six rings, then we're talking having a different conversation. But anyway, I found that interesting. Another magazine story also came out involving Giannis heavily, and that was out of Rolling Stone, of all places, going behind the scenes of the NBA Finals back in July and highlighting some of the issues they dealt with as far as COVID-19 goes. There was a big scare that we all remember when Thanasis, his brother, and we know they're very, very close, Thanasis was ruled out of Game 5 with a positive COVID-19 test. I think we all kind of held our breath, wondering if Giannis would be a close contact at least, and at worst, also be somebody who tests positive for COVID-19. We presumed that's not what happened, because he played in Game 5, played in Game 6, obviously delivered a singular performance that will be remembered in Milwaukee forever. But this article was a little confusing to me. It was a little muddy. I wasn't quite sure what its ultimate, like, revelation was exactly. I mean, it highlighted some behind-the-scenes stuff and talked to a lot of people, a lot of them who didn't reveal their names, and that's fine. I just didn't see a whole lot that was shocking to me necessarily. I thought it might say, oh, well, Giannis was a close contact, but then they sort of talked about it or changed their rules or something, but it did not indicate that. So I actually struggled figuring out what to take away from this particular article. What did you take away from it?
It was richly reported, credit to the author for getting inside some of the team activities. On a broad level, JR, my takeaway was they got to that point. Oh my God, why did the NBA almost cut their nose off despite their face? Like, they had done all these crazy protocols, and then in the finals, we're like, friends, family, team meetings, off campus. Yeah, sure. Who gives a crap? Like, oh my God, you almost ruined it all. Like really? Like, you couldn't, like, you did the hard thing. And then, like, and look, I don't blame Mike Budenholzer, who's quoted in there as saying, like, he encouraged the team to sit with their family and friends from wherever and have these. I don't blame that. Look, if the league's going to let you do it. Right? Like, it's just, that's what I couldn't believe, was that the NBA almost did it to themselves. And as someone who was literally being COVID tested every morning, mandatory vax, mandatory mask, like, it's a little insulting to me then, I guess, that, like, this was all going on, plus the 100,000 people, 80,000 people around Milwaukee. You know what I mean? Like, I think that was disingenuous on the NBA part in that way. Now, in regards to what you were saying with Giannis, we all wonder, JR, of course. I was in Phoenix with Ben Steele, sitting in this coffee shop in this grocery store when Thanasis tests positive. It's like, oh, my God, like, how is Giannis going to play in this game? Like, Josh Oppenheimer was out. That's, like, Giannis's personal coach. Like, none of that made a ton of sense, although I did feel if he tested positive, there was no way they could not, like, sort of, there's no way he could play. And I think Chris Paul testing positive at the start of the Western Conference Finals and missing two games kind of showed that, right? Like, I think Aaron Rodgers, I don't think they could have fudged that. Now, the close contact thing is, the NBA didn't have, like, the tracers that the NFL does, where you can literally monitor every person's movement in and out of the facility. The NBA doesn't have that. I, as someone who is in currently, as we record this, JR, the NBA health and safety protocol, like, I went through the contact tracing process, and it's all the people being honest. And I'm not saying the Bucks or the Adetokumbos were not honest. What I'm saying is there's just it's sort of word of mouth and visuals and seating charts and pictures. Like, they called the Hawks. Who was I sitting next to? How was that room set up? So, like, they do that, but, you know, I mean, it definitely makes you wonder, like, how that happened. But you're right. Overall, like, I think it showed maybe the internal panic of the MVP being having to miss games. But at the end of the day, JR, I was like, my biggest takeaway was, like, how did the NBA almost screw this up for itself? Right? Like, that's all. Like, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. Having lived it, I couldn't believe what they were allowing behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I think it's only natural to wonder, because it isn't just the Milwaukee Bucks who would suffer if Giannis goes down with as a close contact. It's the NBA, because now the finals presumably aren't going to be delayed. They're going to go on without Giannis, and then there's a massive asterisk there, and it'll live there forever because of whether or not it was the right thing to do, because it would be probably the right thing to do. It will always be because the NBA protocol stipulated that Giannis could not play unless he has a positive test. It will always be the NBA's decision that Giannis couldn't play. And I mean, that is, first of all, we thought the 2001 conspiracy theories were you know, out there and everywhere. Now this would be a whole another level, and it would really damage, I think, the NBA product overall. So I think it's only natural to wonder if Giannis would be given special consideration, or Chris Paul, you know, not necessarily just the Bucks star, but any truly star player. I think we can all agree Thanasis was a jolt of energy off the bench, but losing him is not going to raise the eyebrows that losing, you know, a starter would be. So fascinated to know truly what the contact tracing process was. We'll never know, and you know, it's all water to the bridge now anyway, but at least that's what the Rolling Stone article at least raised that question for me. If, like, maybe all of that was on the level, but it didn't ultimately dig in enough to really answer that question. I'm not even sure it explored it quite how I guess I would have liked to have seen it. I don't know. The moral of the story is the Bucks won the championship, and it's all over now.
Right.
Let's just go with that. Hey, before we get to our features of the week, anything else you wanna touch on this Bucks team?
Real quick, let's put a pin in this for the next pod, JR, to see how this finish of the homestand goes. The dueling MVP matchup in Denver after Thanksgiving. Giannis Antetokounmpo, JR, he turns his ankle against the Knicks, and he has 15 points, 15 rebounds. We can admit, okay, he didn't look great at the end of that game in New York, right? Misses the game in Boston, comes back against Atlanta. You would say, doesn't look quite right. Okay, well, let's include the Knicks game, because he did play. So at Washington, at Philly, at New York. And then let's say he gets healthy, Lakers, OKC, Orlando. This man is averaging 16 rebounds, 29 points. Let's see. Sorry, I pulled this up. 29.2 points per game, 16.2 rebounds per game. He has blocked 7, 8, 12, 13 shots in those games, averaging over 6 assists. Like, he has found a gear in this recent stretch that is really high, even for him. Not all the threes have gone in. Not all the free throws have gone in, but he's looked good. So let's put a pin in this, JR, just to see if this was just a stretch where he was like, I need to do more because Chris isn't here, or Chris is coming back. Drew's not hot. I don't know. So let's just kind of see if he sort of extends this run and really, I think he always deserves being the MVP conversation. He's that kind of player now, JR, but I don't know. I think if you can string 10 games together like this, it's maybe a bigger sample size than just cherry picking kind of 5 or 6. I'm just putting it out there. He's playing at a really, really high level right now. Let's see if it continues, if it was just something he felt he needed to do to help the team get over 500.
How weird would it be if Giannis won 3 MVPs in 4 years, and it's that fourth year, the one he didn't win, that everyone in Milwaukee is going to remember? Everyone's going to be like, but wait, the MVP years aren't even the best part. That would be wild. All right, let's get to it now, as we do every week. Again, if you have any suggestions for this first feature, One Quick Buck, that's a Bucks player that you want to hear a little more about. Not an MVP, not a guy who hangs from the rafters, not an all-star, somebody who wasn't on one of the championship teams, but just, you know, one of those mid-level guys that every now and then you find yourself talking about with your buddies in the bar. Feel free to shout out at me at Twitter, on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. Here we have One Quick Buck.
Desmond Mason with authority. Man. Monte Ellis puts it up at the buzzer and got it.
No way.
Monte Ellis wins the game and then heads to the locker room.
No. You got to be kidding me. Charlie Villanueva. He has got the mojo going.
To the bell, man. In your face, Brad Lohas.
The Milwaukee Bucks select Larry Sanders from Virginia Commonwealth University. Larry is not here.
One Quick Buck.
Hey, Jim. I'm actually borrowing from the current team in a way. There was a statistic that popped up in that Orlando game on Monday that Giannis and Bobby Portis became the first teammates to have 20 points and 15 rebounds in a game since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and, do you remember the other guy involved there?
Well, I'd have to think it'd be Oscar Robertson.
Oh, no. Oscar Robertson would never be One Quick Buck. The other guy I mentioned, Curtis Perry. We're gonna go way back in time and to the 1972-73 Milwaukee Bucks. A role player by the name of Curtis Perry. Do you have any knowledge rolling around in your head about Curtis Perry?
Wow. Other than the name vaguely ringing a bell from that era-ish. Yeah. The finals team in Boston against Boston in 74, right?
No,
that's about it.
Actually, I don't think he's on the 74 team. You know what? He's got to be on the 74 team. Hold on. I am going to double.
Yeah, they went. Yeah, he was on the 73-74 team. But maybe he didn't finish the season with them. I don't quite know.
So he was drafted out of Southwest Missouri State. That's Missouri State these days, in 1970 by the San Diego Rockets. And then he ended up traded to the Bucks. He's actually traded to the Bucks right after the championship team in 1971 for Greg Smith. And that was, I think, Greg Smith was you talked to him for the 71 project that we did at jsonline.com. A real key component to that 71 Bucks team. He was a starter. He was a really important player, and he didn't ultimately end up. I think trading him might have been a bigger detriment to that Bucks team than anybody could have realized at the time. When I talked to Eddie Doucette, he thought the trade of Greg Smith was one of the things that really took that team from being a championship team to just slightly a notch below. And then of course they end up not getting back in the 72 and 73 seasons. But he's actually mostly known for a game that he played after he was with the Bucks, because he ends up getting taken by the New Orleans Jazz in the expansion draft, and then got traded to the Phoenix Suns for Neil Walk. Neil Walk was taken second behind Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in that very famous draft in 1969. That the coin flip. Neil Walk was the other side of the coin for the Phoenix Suns. But he played three seasons with the Bucks then. So, yes, he was 70. The seasons that end, 72, 73, 74. 8.5 points per game, Curtis Perry. 8.2 rebounds. Didn't become a star by any means. Kind of lost his spot. But in Phoenix, he played in the 1976 finals against the Celtics. I did not know that there was a greatest game ever played. I know there's one in football, kind of the... But before the merger, there's a greatest game ever played NFL game. There's also one in the NBA. I did not know this. I don't know if it still tracks necessarily. But in 1976, Game 5 of the Finals, Suns-Celtics, greatest game ever played. Do you know anything about that game?
Oh, yeah. All the overtimes. Oh, yeah, definitely.
So a triple overtime game. This is involving John Havlicek of the Celtics. Curtis Perry actually got a pass from Dick Van Arsdale, missed a shot at the end of the second overtime. Havlicek tried to get the rebound, didn't get it. Perry got it, hits a 15-footer with 5 seconds left. So, but then Havlicek comes down the other end and scores to give the Celtics a 1-point lead. The Celtics thought they won the game in double overtime, but they end up calling everybody back on the floor. They decide there's 2 seconds left, and then the Suns call a timeout they didn't have. So it's a technical foul on the Suns, down a point with 2 seconds left. But at that time, all you get is one technical free throw, which the Celtics made to go up 2 points, and then the Suns get the ball right back at midcourt. So the Suns have another possession. They're able to get the ball inbound to Curtis Perry. He ties the game. He hits a shot. The pass from Gar Hurd ties the game at 112 at the buzzer in double overtime. The Celtics do go on and win in triple overtime, but Curtis Perry had a big role in that game. This is, again, all after the Bucks. I'm afraid there aren't many other highlights in this Bucks career. He was not part of the championship team. His son, by the way, Byron Houston. Does that ring a bell? NBA player Byron Houston. I believe he was drafted by the Bulls, but I don't think he ever played for the Bulls. So got to get that Illinois connection in there for you. But but that's it. That's Curtis Perry. Any other thoughts on that guy?
No.
No. Yeah, I think the trivia there is a guy that was brought in to be sort of to keep the Bucks strong after that 71 team, and it just didn't work out. They weren't able to stay at that level and make the championships the NBA finals the next two seasons. All right, let's get to the best part of our show. It is what's making Jim mad.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I am very disappointed.
I'm upset.
Louder! I'm upset. Say it louder!
I'm upset.
That's my secret, Cap. I'm always angry.
What's making Jim mad?
Tell us, Jim. What's going on this week?
So, regardless of how you pronounce it, whether it be caramel or caramel, I'm just mad because that's the thing that ruins everything in the fall for me. Like, I don't want that. Don't put it on my breakfast. Don't put it in my coffee. I don't want it in my candy. Why? Like, it's a very simple why. I don't have a long rant on this one, JR. It's just caramel ruins. I'm from South Side of Chicago, so it's caramel. C-A-R-M-E-L. And it is
like
terrible.
Like Carmel, Indiana, or Carmel High School.
Sure. It's just like, you know what? Even the fact that people pronounce it two different ways makes me mad. Like, I don't want – it ruins a lot of good things in the fall, in the winter for me, JR. So I – that caramel. Caramel is like, I'm not going to name the place I was at for breakfast before I was put in the health and safety protocol. And yes, I wear my mask and all those things. I was not a super spreader. I wanted a thing, the special. It was going to be so good. And then caramel was on it. I'm like, can I get without the caramel? Like, no, we make it with this. I'm like, so, yeah.
Interesting.
Caramel's making me mad, JR.
I have a love hate with caramel because I was a big Caramello guy growing up, the candy bar, but and I still am. Like, if somebody gave me a Caramello candy bar, I would 100% eat it. It's delightful, but it is a consistency issue. Like, you eat it and you pay for it because there's caramel in your teeth and caramel on your fingers. Like, it's just not a very pliable substance. And I just made a trifle for a friend's Thanksgiving gathering, and it involved a lot of caramel sauce. And I thought it would be good, and it ended up just being, like, disgusting. And trying to clean that bowl, oh my goodness. So I am not going to say I'm out on caramel, because I will still eat it. It is delicious to me, as long as it's not too sweet. But definitely a consistency issue. I don't like having to work for my food. And in this case, you absolutely have to work it to enjoy it. Before we go, we've danced around it a little bit, but you are, like you mentioned, in the health and safety protocol journalism edition. What's your status? You said initially no symptoms, so you're going to be back soon, right?
Yeah, I'm in the same. So the NBA's health and safety, I tested positive after a long road trip. Was a surprise to me. I am vaxxed and boosted. No symptoms that I could discern. But I am in the same, just like Chris Middleton, 10 days, which is actually, like, in the NBA world, like, the 11th day is when you're, like, out of it. So I'm missing the whole, homestand in person. I will miss, the games in Denver. Indiana is a little too quick a turnaround to try to book another road trip, but I'll be back. But yeah, I'm good. Thankfully. Thanks to all the listeners out there that sent me messages on social media. I am good. Things are good. And I appreciate that.
How weird to be one of those people who just have no symptoms. And it's like, are you sure I have this? But they do run these tests twice. So I guess you do. But super, super weird. And just the extra precaution. So good to know you are doing well and that you will be back in the saddle soon enough. And the Milwaukee Bucks are doing a lot of winning without you. Maybe they're going to not want you to stick around, Jim. I don't know.
I don't know. I was there for game six. I don't think that that card can never be pulled on me.
That is true. You were there for the most important win in franchise history. You get a free pass. Free pass for the rest of the time. Jim, thanks for joining us on the Point Forward podcast. Again, he is Jim Ozarski. Find him on Twitter, Jim Ozarski. That's O-W-C-Z-A-R-S-K-I. I am at J.R. Radcliffe. That's Radcliffe with an E on the end. Check out everything he has at jsonline.com, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, for all your Bucks coverage. And we will be back again next week. Thanks, Jim. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.